Well, let's dig in here, and I'm going to go for about 20 minutes, and then we'll have more discussion. But let's dig in here with chapter 2, and if you didn't get a sheet, sheets are over here. Feel free to grab one. The second question here is, how could a good God allow suffering? This is also, others would say, the problem of pain, right? How can God say that he's good and allow so much pain in the world? So the first thing I think we have to identify and define is, what is suffering or pain? What do we mean when we say that? And I'll just throw that out as a question at the beginning. When people talk about suffering, what are they talking about? You walked into a family gathering or work or whatever, and someone said, I'm just really suffering.
Anything that's hard, uncomfortable.
Good. Yep. What else would people identify as suffering?
Not pleasant.
Yeah, sure.
Pain.
Pain.
Something they wouldn't
deprivation.
Choose.
Deprivation.
Deprivation.
Loss.
Yeah.
Something they wouldn't choose for themselves.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good. Loss. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say most of the time when I'm at the counseling office and someone comes in and says they're suffering, I usually identify that as them feeling something because of another situation, right? It's usually not them. Like, people, I think, would say I'm depressed, and that's more of like me problem, right? I usually identify suffering as an outside them thing that's bothering them. Now, you know, there's of course different people that mean different things by it, but I would say that generally that's what you hear people talk about. Biblically, suffering is a very interesting word because there are several different words that are translated for suffering. Romans 3, one translation, again, a different word, is pressure. That's used, that's hemming someone in. We would probably talk about feeling trapped. But Paul says, not only that, but we rejoice in our sufferings. He's saying, I rejoice in my entrapments when I feel like I don't have a way out. Because he says it builds endurance. Romans 8:17, provided we suffer with him, in order that we also may be glorified with him. This word is more to suffer together with other people, to feel pain together with another is what that means. And then in Romans 8:18, 2 Corinthians 1, 5, 6, 7, and then Philippians 3, the word suffering or sharing in the sufferings of Christ, to share. This word means to properly the capacity and privilege of experiencing strong feelings of agony. And I think that's more what we would probably identify in our culture today as suffering, right? So through the Bible, it's more of a complex idea of suffering. And when we read through the Bible and hear about suffering, then it's important to identify which suffering is talking about. I'll simply say this. The Bible has plenty of suffering in it, right? Yeah. When people say, hey, if you're a Christian, you're not going to suffer, they don't understand. Like, go read the Bible, right? That's not what it's saying. But it deals with it head on. It doesn't avoid the issue of suffering at all. Okay, second question here. Is why do pain and suffering exist? And then maybe where did suffering come from? Where's the origin of suffering? And give you a very simple, quick answer on this, and we could go into it more if you want, but that suffering and pain, and really the problem of pain, came from sin. Where did sin come from? Sin came from man. God didn't create pain and put it upon man in the beginning. And this is where we go back and say, do we believe in free will? Yes, we do. Because two humans had 100% free will. And they chose to sin against God. It's almost what we were talking about this morning. They were choosing to covet. They wanted what God had. Therefore, because of the sin, the action of sin, pain and suffering came into the world. We usually will talk about sin leads to death, right? Well, where did sin come from? It came from free will, a free will choosing against God. God himself has understood and suffered more than anyone. So a lot of times when people say, how could a good God allow suffering? The question is, how could a good God suffer? And he does. He suffered. He sent his son. He suffered the consequences, and could be argued, of having to send his son and to send his only son. Jesus, of course, the man of suffering, the man of sorrows. Jesus Christ, as a human, suffered more than any other human. I think a lot of times when people are asking this question, how could a good God allow suffering? What they're looking for is, hey, how does God understand suffering? Does he get it? And that's where Jesus has to be at the forefront of the conversation. Yes, Jesus went to the cross. Jesus didn't have to suffer. He chose to suffer. He didn't have to die. He chose to die. And the only hope we have in suffering is brought by God through Christ. That he understands suffering and he leads us and redeems suffering. This kind of gets to the next point here, and we can always come back to stuff. But the other question is, if God exists, why does he allow, and in parentheses here, pointless suffering, right? Because a lot of times the question when being asked is, how could a good God allow suffering, is that suffering is just meaningless. You know, there's no reason why these people had to go through this. Pointless suffering, I think, is an important part of this. I'm not going to read all the quotes here. I'll put them on there for you. I think they're really helpful. But I will say this, that the first quote there, or a little paragraph, if evil appears pointless to me, then it must be pointless. You can't give an answer for something, then you go, well, that just has no meaning. It's pointless to me, but it's not pointless. And again, I think what suffering is usually identifying is someone else's problem that I worry about or I don't know how to give an answer to. Because most of the time for ourselves, when we go through something difficult and we then kind of move through it, we're like, oh, yeah, not all the time, but a lot of times we're like, gosh, I see why I went through this. I know this is a very elementary illustration, but when I exercise, when I go to Planet Fitness with all the other people who don't judge each other, which I like that place, and we get in there and we start doing our thing, and then my leg starts hurting, I'm like, it's worth it. I'm here doing this. There is suffering involved. I'm feeling pain, but it's not pointless. I would argue that no suffering is pointless because God has a plan. I mean, again, let's put ourselves in the position of Joseph. Joseph has just gotten beaten up. His brothers think he's a complete jerk. They were trying to get rid of him. He's there in the pit, and he's suffering. At that point, if you would have asked Joseph, is this pointless? He probably would have said yes. Keep going. Go on further. He's in prison. He doesn't know why. Like, this has been terrible. Was it pointless at that point? It felt like it. But then he becomes this ruler. He's able to help his family. He's able to change things, and he has this position. And what man meant for evil, God meant for good. It was not pointless. But if you stop and you say, right now, I don't get it, I understand why people would feel like it's pointless. Keep going. Keep going. That's when it starts to actually say, make sense. If we enter into real suffering with people, we walk with them through a long term, you begin to see the redemption, the process. It is not a pointless thing that's happening. I thought that little story that Keller told about the guy at his church that had, I think he got shot and he lost his eyesight. And then the quote there, as my physical eyes were closed, my spiritual eyes were opened. But in the moment after he got shot and he can't see anymore, and you say, is this pointless? He's like, yeah, of course it feels that way. But then that was the way that God drew him to himself. I think if we all went through our own personal stories, especially as we see God's work in our lives, it is through times of suffering and pain and difficulty that God often uses to open our eyes to him. True, difficult times is when we grow. When things are easy and it's just kind of cruising along, we often don't move toward God. But through the difficult stuff, through the suffering, is when we begin to move closer to God. One of my boys, I won't say which one of them over here, one of my boys, when I would say, you don't need to do that, and I would discipline him, he would say, this doesn't make any sense. And I had to learn to say to him, it's okay that you don't understand it. It's the right thing. This needs to happen. I think that's often, a lot of times, too, what people are saying when they're asking this question, is this doesn't make any sense to me, therefore, I'm not going to hold to it, believe it, live my life this way. There's so many things in life that don't make sense. There's sicknesses, cancer, makes no sense. It affects us. There are things all the time that we don't understand, that we can't make complete sense of. It still has power in our lives. We can't ignore something simply because it doesn't make sense. So again, when we're talking about suffering and it seems pointless, ununderstandable, we have to also realize the implications of it. Okay. Fourth thing here, and I think this is on the other side of your sheet. Being mad at God is different than trying to prove he doesn't exist, or being mad at God is not also reason to say you don't believe. It's okay to be mad at God. He's a big boy. He can handle it. If you're upset that something happened to someone, it doesn't seem fair. I mean, gosh, we can all go around and say, this happened to this person, this happened to me, it seems pointless. Why did this happen? Why, God? Is fine. Saying I don't believe in God is unreasonable and irrational. We can go through the Bible and see all the times that people are mad at God. David gets mad at God a lot, shakes his fist at God, right? He had a relationship with God. So be able to be mad at God. I mean, if anybody you could argue had every right to be mad at God, it was Job. His life was brutal, right? He never turns against God. He gets mad. He doesn't know what to do. He's confused. Fine. I think, and this is not in Keller's book, this was when I was on campus and we were wrestling with this. I think so often the reason people are saying, I don't understand, like there was suffering, so I don't believe anymore, was because of the way that they operate within their own relationships. If there's any suffering or any tension, they leave the relationship. I think this has a lot to do with like how people view relationships. That somebody hurt me, I'll never talk to them again. My parents, this happened, I don't want anything to do with them. And so it's very easy to say, this is your own, not easy to say, it's hard to say, but easy to understand. This is your own baggage. This is your own relational baggage that you're bringing into this and putting this on God. Because a lot of times, too, people will even say, the reason I'm suffering is because of what God put that person through that has affected me. Why did they do that? And I want to get away from that. It hurts too much, so I'm not willing to deal with it. C.S. Lewis uses this quite a bit as well as he starts to understand, and even in his own struggle with this, started to understand what true justice was. And his whole point was, how do we think something is just and right and good outside of God? How can we make a judgment that God's doing something wrong without a moral standard? Where did that moral standard come from? Okay, from God. This was kind of Lewis's whole point. He said, where is true justice if there is no God and he is not good? And why do we care? So even the argument itself of entering in and saying, how could a good God allow this suffering, is a cry out for God, a cry out for justice. Where does that come from? God wrote that on their hearts. He writes it on our heart. Our desire for justice, our desire for laws, is not from nature. It's from God. The law is written on our heart. If we want to be very natural about this, then we go out and see in my backyard coyotes eating deer all the time. Is that not fair? No, it's fair. So why can't we just consume and eat and kill? Because there's something in our heart that says it's not right. Nature doesn't teach us that. It's God that teaches us that. Suffering is wrong because we see that there's God. There's got to be an answer. These standards come from Him. Yeah, the only other thing that I'll kind of say here, I'm going to do it on time, is that last quote. I believe it's on your sheet. Therefore, though Christianity does not provide the reason for each experience of pain, it provides deep resources for actually facing suffering with hope and courage rather than bitterness and despair. And I think when we really think through suffering personally as Christians as well, and what God's up to, why, how do we respond to this? See Jesus as the ultimate sufferer and that he gives us hope and peace in this. Then it gives Christians answers. And then we're able to give answers to other people, especially those who are not yet believers. So, okay. Questions, comments? Concerns? What are y'all's thoughts?
One of the things that you had said about suffering.